Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
Let's get this thing started. Heading into the weekend, plenty of football to talk about today. And also, Coastal Carolina adds a new sport, but it's not going to be for the time being in the Big South. We'll get into that later in the program. But we are going to start a little bit of the conversation that we had yesterday involving the South Carolina football program. I found this very interesting. I was driving up to North Myrtle Beach after the show finished yesterday, and I heard Phil Kornblut interviewing Ellis Johnson, former defensive coordinator for South Carolina, and talking about that very same issue that we were kind of discussing yesterday involving talent in the South Carolina program. And I thought his answer to Phil, his show airs from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the station most days, and I found his answer to Phil very enlightening. He says that South Carolina has SEC-caliber players, but they don't have SEC standouts, really, and that's the difference.
I do see SEC players on the field on both sides, but what I don't see is the SEC difference makers. All those guys can play in that conference, but they can't make a difference in that conference, and I think that's what they're missing right now is those 10 to 12 plays a game that are just dynamic that you can't coach, that a player makes a special play and turns the ball game around or breaks one open. And you know, you have to go all the way back to the first game, the one that just pops out in your mind. That was Sean Carson's run against North Carolina. But it's just not getting those things on either side of the ball right now.
And it is interesting when you think about the South Carolina team and who's going to be a professional on that team. And I believe Farrow Cooper is going to be a pro, and I believe Sky Moore is going to be a pro. But I don't really know, looking at the rest of that roster, who else is going to the NFL. And that, in terms of difference makers, as Ellis Johnson would say, guys with absolute next level talent, there is no heck of a lot of that. And that seems to be a lot of what people were saying yesterday when they were calling in and messaging us, that recruiting has fallen off. And there are decent players on those teams. You're just not seeing the Lattimore, Clowney, Gilmore, Ingram level of talent out there. And it takes one or two guys like that to move the needle in close football games. I think that's what Ellis Johnson was getting to. So I thought that was interesting to hear him weigh in on that right after that being the main conversation on our show yesterday. And also, since then, we have found out that Perry Orth, I'm not sure. Spurrier was a little evasive as to how much of it was Lorenzo Nunez's shoulder versus how much of it is him just wanting to have a more balanced sort of passing attack going up against LSU. But he has made the decision to bring Perry Orth in as his starting quarterback this weekend.
Perry Orth! Who are you, Johnny Unitas?
Oh, that is such a great clip. Brian just played Todd Ellis, Gamecock Radio Network play-by-play guy, in a moment of a little bit of hyperbole. A little bit. He was moving the chains against Kentucky, and Todd Ellis, he got a little excited. I need to hear that again.
Perry Orth! Who are you, Johnny Unitas?
I don't... Oh, man, what's next? Gerald Dixon, who are you, Lawrence Taylor? In all seriousness, though, I love Todd Ellis as a play-by-play guy. I've met him, too. He's a nice dude. But they have an energetic crew. Like, sometimes a lot of college play-by-play, listening to it, a lot of it can get really dry and really boring. And it's fun hearing both Todd Ellis and Tommy Suggs both have playing experience, and they both clearly have an emotional investment in the game, right? They both, not only are they South Carolina alums, but they played for South Carolina. So you get a real energetic sort of homer feel to their broadcast. They're one of my favorite college teams to listen to, but I almost spit out my coffee when I heard Todd Ellis say that about Perry Orth. But Spurrier was asked specifically whether bringing Perry Orth in was going to, you know, open up their playbook a little bit more, make them a little more dangerous through the air, and he kind of shrugged that off.
It didn't open up very much against Georgia, did it? But, yeah, hopefully we can, you know, get some protection, get some balls out, and run the running backs. But Zoe could be back in there running some, too. So we'll bring our whole arsenal with us. All right.
Whole arsenal. whole arsenal. Well, it will be interesting to see, because I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the reasoning there is, if they just feel like they have a better chance to win with Orth, or whether Nunez is that hurt. I mean, that's the kind of nuance to a Spurrier decision that he's just not going to give the press access to, because it's entirely possible that he just doesn't have a big enough command of the playbook and they're too one-dimensional when Nunez is in the game, that they want to give Orth perhaps more run against LSU. But for all of those reasons, it is going to be a tall task for the Gamecocks on Saturday. Clemson hosting Georgia Tech in a game that in the beginning of the season looked like one of the two or three games on Clemson's schedule where they could really trip up. And Georgia Tech's lost three in a row, including they were up 21-0 against North Carolina last weekend and lost 38-31. So they allowed a lot of Tar Heel points over the last three quarters of that game. And they've lost, you know, three Notre Dame, and they've lost to Duke. So Georgia Tech coming in with a sort of battered defense, and it will be a perfect opportunity for Clemson to kind of get their swag back on offense. I mean, they've been winning games, but they won against Louisville and they won against Notre Dame in nail-biting fashion, in large part because their defense was getting stops. And people are raving about the NFL talent that they have on their defense. I mean, Mackenzie Alexander, some people think, is going to be a first-round pick. People are giving Brent Venables a lot of props, saying that he's going to be a head coaching candidate pretty soon elsewhere, like another one of Dabo's assistants, Chad Morris, who's in his first year at SMU and having some difficulties. But, hey, he's a head coach. A lot of people don't have head coaches on their staffs. Going into that one thing that is interesting, a lot of people seem to be really supportive of Columbia and the entire state, given everything that's happened in terms of the flooding. And Clemson on their field is going to have a little outline of the state of South Carolina. It's going to say one state on it. So at least, you know, they're doing the classy thing there by acknowledging what's happened in Columbia. Now, they're really, in terms of that game with Georgia Tech, I might just be really overlooking the Yellow Jackets because they've lost three games in a row. But I really think this is an opportunity for Clemson's offense to click. I really think it is. They haven't had that game this year. I mean, they scored a defensive touchdown against Appalachian State. Yeah, they got things. They scored 41 points in that game, but some of it was a defensive touchdown. And they got out to a slow start. And against Wofford, I'm not really going to talk about what they've done to an FCS opponent. But in terms of those tough games, Louisville and Notre Dame, the offense hasn't busted loose yet. And when you've been thinking about the Clemson team over the last 4 or 5 years that they've been successful, it's been crazy skill talent running around, you know, a lot of snaps in a game and playmakers getting loose. We haven't seen that yet. We've seen them win more running between the tackles and because of a dominant defense. So I think this is, if Clemson is going to be a playoff team, and I think there's a very good shot that they will be, that offense is going to have to step it up a notch. And I haven't seen Deshaun Watson go out there and have a Heisman kind of moment that I expected in the beginning of the season. I mean, I'm not saying that I expected him to be the Heisman, but I expected him to make the ceremony, to be one of those four or five names in the conversation. And he didn't even have 100 passing yards against Notre Dame. Part of it is they have a lead. It's raining outside, not convenient for the passing offense. But I also think losing Mike Williams for the year to that neck injury, I think that that takes some verticality away from their offense, prevents them from stretching the field a little bit. And I'm interested to see against Georgia Tech whether they can adapt, whether they can put a lot of points on the board. Because if that offense can get close to what Clemson's offense has been with Watson in last year or during the Boyd era, I think they got a very, very good shot of going to the playoffs. So 843-652-3776. If you have thoughts on South Carolina and Clemson's matchup in terms of what you are expecting this weekend, what would be a good sign for both? Interested in hearing your feedback on that. You can also hit us up at 1003 The Team. Now, I saw this story earlier in the week, and it kind of feeds into the greater discussion about Leonard Fournette and before him Jadeveon Clowney in terms of when a college football prospect is ready for professional football. And sometimes that readiness is before their third year when they're actually allowed to enter the draft. And with some guys make a decision to go pro early and don't get drafted, in which case it would have been way better for them to stay in college. I mean, Victor Hampton and Kelsey Quarles, two guys that certainly would have helped South Carolina's struggling defense last year. Maybe they could have gotten themselves into the NFL draft if they were entering as seniors instead of as juniors. Well, they went early in 2013 and didn't get drafted. They got bad information on what their draft status was, and they left early. And so we could sit here all day and come up with examples of players making good and bad decisions with regard to the draft. And I will say that the majority of college football players are not ready before year three, like a lot of good college basketball players are. Like, college basketball players, and basketball players are ready for professional basketball at an earlier age than football players are for professional football. Because the difference in size is just so critical between college football and professional football. It's there in the basketball level too, but there's just it's a more physical game, and the maturation of the body. Guys becoming grown men out there. That's important for the NFL. And also the amount of time they have to spend all day studying in film room and figuring out scheme. I mean, that kind of stuff. It happens at the college level too, but there are strict limitations on how many hours a week you can spend with student athletes in the NCAA now. I mean, Rich Rod got popped for that at Michigan a couple of years ago, to the point where my friend who coached Michigan's cross country and track team, their practice hours were very limited, to the point where after a meet on the bus, he wasn't allowed to talk about running with any of his kids. So, because then it would be considered practice time if on the bus he was having a conversation with them about their competition. So, I mean, people take these practice hours really seriously. And from my experience and window into collegiate athletics, these universities love to tattle on themselves to the NCAA over minor things, so they have credibility when a big thing happens. Like, they would love to turn in an Olympic sport for misusing recruiting money, accidentally buying an extra pizza, so that they can then tell the NCAA if their football program comes under fire, hey, look, we threw a flag on ourselves. We're compliant. There is an attitude of compliance here. There's total control. We haven't lost a single bit of control over here. And so, you know, practice time is harshly policed at the college level. So there is a big time difference in terms of the amount of football you're expected to study at the college and professional level. I mean, there are a million reasons why it takes people several years to become good NFL prospects. It just really, and I think in the case of most, it's a good idea, but it really, honestly, it does grate at me that someone like Clowney, like, clearly is the best prospect and has to wait an entire year, in which case he's putting wear and tear on his body and not getting compensated. So that as a concept bothers me, especially when you look at a lot of the pioneers of industry in this country. Bill Gates, no college degree. Paul Allen, no college degree. The gentleman who started Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, no college degree. So I think that the argument for holding people in doesn't really have merit. I think that in most cases it is, you know, air quotes, for their own good, but I think that in this country you should have the ability to do so. And I heard about Miles Jack, the UCLA linebacker who is leaving his team right now because of a season-ending knee injury. He's a junior, so he will be draft eligible this spring. I heard about him leaving his team to essentially rehab off campus and to make sure that he's ready for the combine and the draft process. So dropping out of UCLA in his third year before the season's over to get ready for the draft. And I was really intrigued by that as a story because Fournette hasn't said that he doesn't want to go to college at all. People are just saying for him that he needs to just go to IMG and protect his multi-million dollar body. People said that about Clowney. But Clowney didn't really take a microphone and say, hey, this is really unfair. I hate being here. No one has really tried to fight that fight yet. And I think they don't want that media backlash. And I think for the most part, I mean, it's pretty cool being big man on campus in the SEC and the Pac-12. Getting an education is a good thing. And I think that there just no one wants to be that poster child that raises his hand and says, hey, this is unfair to me. And so certain people in the media have just kind of latched onto this. And I was very curious about Miles Jack. I was like, is he going to be this guy that says finally that hey, I should have been able to go out early. And I thought his comments were really interesting. First off, Jim Mora, you could tell his coach was not thrilled about Miles Jack leaving his team midseason to start getting ready for the NFL draft. And he personally feels like it's going to be a risk for Miles Jack to go from a season-ending injury to get draft eligible. He feels like he probably should have come back.
My personal opinion is I think he's a tremendous football player and a tremendous athlete. I think it's very risky to do this. You know, having been on that side, there's going to be a lot of speculation as to, you know, exactly what he is and where he fits. And as I told Miles on Sunday, you know, NFL teams are very, very conservative. And if there's any question whatsoever, they'll pass on you in a heartbeat. You know, they're going to take the sure thing. So, you know, I explained that to him, but I feel like they'd already made their decision. And so, you know, like I said, I hope it works out best for him. But I, you know, as a guy that spent half of my life in the NFL, I would move with great caution. And I would tell that to all of our players.
I think that that's putting him in a weird position. I mean, he didn't totally throw Miles Jack under the bus there. He's walking both lines saying, hey, I have NFL experience. But on the other hand, you hate the idea that a star football player on your team who you look to for leadership would essentially walk out on his teammates at midseason. Even though a guy is injured, he's expected on some level to participate in team activities, right? What do we hear about Clemson's quarterback Deshaun Watson all spring? He wasn't ready to play spring football, but he was out there. He was leading the team. He was taking mental reps. He was standing behind the offensive line while Schuessler and Kelly Bryant and everybody else was out there taking snaps, so that he appeared to be mentally engaged. He was a part of the process. Different for Watson because he's not draft eligible right now. But I think that a lot of coaches would prefer even their injured athlete be out there and take part in sort of the family environment and support their teammates. And so it puts him in a weird position. I'm sure he's like really annoyed by this. I mean, Jim Orr probably doesn't want to be doing interviews about his star player leaving the team. And at the same time, he doesn't, you know, he realizes that why Miles Jack did it, and he's not totally turning his back on the kid. And Miles Jack went on ESPN Radio to kind of explain his situation, and he just kind of felt like the timing was right to get out of school.
When the injury had taken place, UCLA is on the quarter system, so we actually just started school last week. And pretty much when I injured myself, I couldn't really get around campus for a week. So I was kind of dead that whole week. So I was behind school already a week. Then moving forward with my football career, I just felt like, you know, I felt like I had done enough at UCLA. I felt like I had done it, you know. So I just felt like in regards to my injury, I wanted to have the best training possible and just put myself in the best position to be ready for the combine. So that's pretty much where I was at. You know, I just wanted to make the right decision. And it was definitely a tough one because, you know, if it was up to me, I'd be out there playing right now, and, you know, none of this would be about. But, you know, I just feel like it was the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the dude would rather not have a season-ending knee injury. What I thought was really interesting is that while he makes that decision to leave, he is asked whether or not he felt like he would have been ready early. And he goes all in. I don't want to say all in, but he strongly supports the process of guys staying in college for 3 years, which is interesting. So he actually does not become kind of the poster boy for a football player wanting to go earlier than three.
Definitely not. Definitely not. I myself didn't feel like I was, I don't know, like the whole three-year rule, I agree with it. You know, I definitely think it's a great time for, you know, us to get our bodies right and our minds right and everything. So me personally, for myself, I wouldn't have. I would have definitely played, you know, 3 years and then seen where I was at, you know, but no, I for sure wouldn't have pulled myself out after 2 years of playing football.
So interesting there. 843-652-3776 is the number. Going to keep the conversation going. A couple of social media responses. What are you expecting for South Carolina and Clemson this weekend? Some things to look forward to. Also, I'm going to weigh in on Coastal Carolina next segment. Reason I haven't been giving that game a heck of a lot of burn this week is Presbyterian is 1-4, and their only win is over a team that doesn't have scholarships. So I'm expecting Coastal Carolina fireworks on Saturday out there. So we can get into that. The sport Coastal Carolina is adding. Also, Josh Norman, getting a little mail from the NFL this week that I'm sure he doesn't find ideal. It's coming up next in Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Got a tweet from our guy Dean once again at 1003 the team. Dishani football this Saturday, hashtag Heisman. I would be really shocked if he doesn't have one of those games where he gets loose. I'm not going to make too much of him not throwing for over 100 yards against Notre Dame because of how bad the weather was and they were playing with a lead and their defense was playing so well. But Kizer threw for like 300 yards. Granted, part of that's playing from behind. I get that. But I've been waiting for that Deshaun Watson unleash game, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win the Heisman.
Well, he's not going to win the Heisman. He's too far behind. Like, to win the Heisman, you have to play strong throughout the entire season. Like, people have to be mentioning your name in the Heisman conversations early, and you have to finish. And that's the thing about it. Like, Fournette, I know that running backs only 2 of 1 in the last 15 years, but he's getting that positive early media coverage, and who's going to hold him under 200 yards? Like, what could possibly ruin Fournette's Heisman right now? He would have to get held to like 60 yards against Bama and fumble like 3 times and they lose that game or something. Like, he would have to have, I feel like he has such a strong lead at this point. Like, Cody Kessler, he was another name that was up there early. SoCal's lost twice already. They only scored 12 points last night. It's not going to be him. I mean, Nick Chubb, he got his yards against Bama, but that would have been a real moment for him to step up there in that void. I mean, I suppose it's not too late if Watson just starts throwing bombs all over the field for 6, 7, 8 games, but he's got a lot of work to do. I mean, you got a 99-yard game on your resume. I mean, especially against a lot of these Big 12 quarterbacks, like Baker Mayfield's playing a video game every weekend. That guy, I feel like the guy's throwing for like 800 yards every weekend. I don't know what they do in the Big 12 on defense. Like, these guys are just air raid all day, every day. Coastal Carolina against Presbyterian this weekend, 3 p.m. kickoff. Just taking a look at this on paper. Now, I haven't watched Presbyterian at all this year. Two of the more interesting names in college football, the Chanticleer and the Blue Hose, though. It's like, basically, anytime Coastal plays somebody with a unique nickname, you can say two of the more interesting nicknames in college football. That's what we said against Western Illinois with the Leathernecks. They were pretty spicy, though. They gave Coastal everything they wanted. That was a one-touchdown game. Coastal had to pull away late with special teams. But I don't imagine that kind of drama with the Blue Hose. I don't imagine the Blue Hose causing too many problems at Brooks Stadium this weekend. The Blue Hose averaged 12 points a game on offense. They have one passing touchdown in 5 whole games. Their only win is over Campbell, who does not have a scholarship player on their team. 0 scholarships for a football team. So whatever they do, interesting piece of trivia, coached by a former Panther player, Mike Minter, are the Campbell Camels. But without any scholarships on their team, if they beat anybody, that's a success. So Presbyterian's lone win over them isn't particularly impressive. And as I mentioned, neither is their offense, which generates 12 points a game. So even though they like to play slow and they have a solid defense, I would expect Coastal Carolina to break loose at that point in the game. I would expect they like to bring a lot of guys to the line of scrimmage on defense from my conversation with Alex Ross earlier in the week. And so I think there are going to be real opportunities there for Alex Ross to have a big-time passing game. I wouldn't expect to see him run very much, though. He was walking a little gingerly on that ankle of his when I saw him on Wednesday. So I would expect, with the running backs that Coastal has this year, with not only Hop, D'Angelo Henderson has an opportunity to break the FCS record for most consecutive games with a touchdown coming up this weekend. So, or I believe tie, and then break is the following week. Yeah. So he's got a chance to tie an FCS record with a touchdown. I believe it would be his 19th straight game. So dude gets in the end zone. And it's also interesting to think about right now, and this is one of the hardest things to do, to project how individual players at the FCS level would translate onto the upper level of football. But South Carolina passed on D'Angelo Henderson for Sean Carson. So would be very interesting now. We talk about a Gamecocks team, particularly on offense, that's devoid of talent that's as Ellis Johnson said in the first segment of the show, we played that clip from Sports Talk, they don't have standout talent. They don't have guys that break away. And at least on the FCS level, that's Hop. Now, we don't have the ability to say, okay, this is what he would do if he were on an SEC team. But, I mean, that guy's speed and his cutbacks, I have to think there would be a couple of ways that Spurrier could use him. But that's just a hypothetical at this stage of the game.
I mean, didn't Talfiero have all of them before? And he's playing in the NFL, so you got to figure it's somewhat
The difference, though, Brian, with Talfiero is that Lorenzo Talfiero, when you walked into the room, you were like, whoa. Yeah. I mean, that dude was like 6'1", 220.
There's plenty of small backs.
He played
in the NFL,
fullback. I know those guys are in vogue right now. Darren Sproles, Jaquizz Rodgers. There are a lot of small, shifty backs. That's why I'm not writing off Hop as a pro prospect. I mean, when it comes down to, he's going to come back to Coastal for his fifth year, his senior year, I'm pretty sure next year. And I don't know what his measurables are going to be on pro day. I don't know if he's going to be able to run that 4.3. But you are right. There are plenty of guys that have that kind of shiftiness that are small, that are used particularly in the passing game, a lot of screens. I mean, Darren Sproles is the, like, if you're projecting what, like, who D'Angelo Henderson's favorite player in the NFL should be, it should be Sproles, right? Like the guy that could potentially pave the way for him. But with Talfiero, what he did would translate to any level of football, and that's why he's on the Ravens 53-man roster, just because he's huge. And he played fullback in junior college, so he could block. And he wasn't, I mean, for a guy that has that much mass, that's, I mean, I don't know what they list him as on the Ravens roster anymore, but I bet he's probably 230 or 240. He moves well for that. But when you look at Coastal's team, a lot of times the FCS players, guys can be very productive at the FCS level and not get a look professionally, and it's because of their size. You see that with Quinn Backus. Quinn Backus could not have done anything more at the college level. He was the Big South Defensive Player of the Year. Not only was he the best player on Coastal's team, he was the best player in the entire conference for three consecutive years. And he got, you know, a cup of coffee with the Texans, and they didn't call him back. And now he's going out to the CFL with the, I'm not even sure what city it is. I know the team's called the Red Blacks. So we hope for Quinn that he can make a living playing professional football. But Quinn was a small guy.
Well, I mean, talking about the Ravens still, their number one, Justin Forsett, has him listed at 5'8", 198, and Hop's listed as 5'8", 205, so.
Listing, okay. I'm not going to get into what guys' actual measurables are, because I'm not standing next to them marking the wall next to their
Forsett's
head.
Yeah, but Forsett's a tiny guy, and he's killing it right now.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I'm not ruling him out, like I said, but Hop is a cutback machine. He's one of those guys that is fast, he's shifty, he's trying to get the big play a lot. I think Abercrombie, more of the smash mouth back in their backfield, he adds a really nice compliment. So we started this conversation just saying, I don't imagine Coastal Carolina quarterback Alex Ross is going to run much this weekend. He has just so much command of that offense, and I imagine he's already playing out in his head ways to, and Dave Patnode is thinking about too, their offensive coordinator, ways to move the ball down the field without the quarterback run. I mean, he's hardly run this year since he busted that ankle up.
Well, I'm expecting he'll probably be sitting on the bench after halftime since
they'll
be up
so
much.
I mean, yeah, it's that. Actually, someone asked me about that yesterday. Someone asked me why they aren't playing Church, because these games are just so winnable, like Alabama A&M. You know, why not give Alex that game off to get 100%? They won 55-0. They didn't take him out until the third quarter. But I think there is something to be said for the offense hasn't really clicked yet, and just continuing to get reps in and having timing with the receivers. I mean, Brian, not to just totally jam a dagger in between your ribs right now, but what happened when Aaron Rodgers, when the Packers got cute, they sat out Rodgers in week 17. So Matt Flynn threw his 80 touchdowns that got him the Seahawks contract. And then they had a bye week in the first round of the playoffs. And then they came back against the Giants and they lost that game. And I think that, I mean, it had been 3 weeks since Aaron Rodgers had played in a professional football game. I think that that's not ideal. I mean, why are bowl games so frequently sloppy relative to the rest of college football season? It's like, well, these guys are in the grind of playing week in, week out for 12 consecutive weeks, and then they take 5 weeks off. Yeah, they're going to look terrible. That's why the first game of the season almost always looks terrible.
Well, also, I mean, it's just anyone can win at any point. So if you don't want to start Ross on the bench and then them get up early or keep it close, because then, like, you can say, oh, bring them in the second half if they're losing. But you don't want an injured quarterback coming in trying to bring a comeback.
Well, you also set yourself up to look really terrible. Like, if they can't move the chains against Presbyterian without him and it's like 3-0 at halftime or 6-3 or something like that, that's a really bad look. If you've got a quarterback that can play, you play the backup and you don't win. So, I mean, I can see why that happened. But Church has won a Big South game before. It was 2013, I believe, when he did. They had quarterback by committee. And he scored immediately against Alabama A&M. I mean, he found Mapp in the end zone, like, pretty much like two or three plays after getting in the game. But that would be an interesting thought. But I think it would be ideal for Coastal if Ross can get in there, can throw a couple of touchdowns in the first half, and like Bama A&M, they don't have to play much in the second half. That would be ideal to me coming out of that situation. But this is conference play. This is where it gets real, because the Big South traditionally has not gotten two teams into the FCS playoff. It happened last year with Liberty and Coastal, and having Liberty and Coastal ranked right now certainly helps. But they lost the head-to-head game to Liberty last year, and they lost the auto bid to the FCS playoffs. So that's something that they can't really afford to do, because traditionally that does not indicate success in the playoffs. So I'm not expecting much resistance from Presbyterian. I mean, maybe it's black and blue and ugly for the first quarter of the game. Maybe it's 7-3 or something like that. But I think eventually Coastal breaks loose on that one. Now, the sport that Coastal is adding, how about this? Beach volleyball. Apparently there's 60 beach volleyball teams in the country. So it's like it's an emerging sport, and you're pretty much keeping your indoor volleyball team out there playing beach volleyball. So it's like when I was running back in the day, everybody in the cross country roster ran indoor and outdoor track, and you get counted on paper as three different teams, but it was really like we were doing the same thing every day. It allows them to use their entire roster and just have that. I don't know what their plans are for the facility though. They're going to drop some sand courts right in the middle of that TD Sports Complex. I think that'd be a huge hit with the fans, like right in the middle of campus. I don't know if they have room though. Brian, have you seen the new rooster statue? Like the new jacked Chauncey?
I saw a picture of it. I haven't been up to campus in forever.
Chauncey's been working out. They've done some really nice things with that TD Sports Complex.
So his boxing gloves he's always carrying around.
Yeah. They've done a really nice job just in the 2 years that I've been here, making that TD Sports Complex or the baseball stadium, the football stadium making it look visually very nice.
Yeah, it's a big step up from when I started.
Yep. Now, we, I believe, here are going to check in with Ian Guerin of the Sun News coming up next segment. There are a lot of high school football reschedulings and games being played on Saturday instead of on Friday. We're going to check in with him right as we're on the cusp of starting region play and the 4A, get a feel for him on how he thinks the season's going for certain programs, who's going to make the playoffs, who he thinks the best player in the area is so far. We're going to get into that next with Ian Guerin of the Sun News. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. We are joined now by a guest of distinction, Ian Guerin, Sun News, MyrtleBeachOnline.com, Twitter, at iGuerin. And Ian is one of our regular contributors to our high school football program on Friday nights, which follows Carolina Forest high school football play-by-play on the station from 10 to 11:30, typically. So we do appreciate Ian joining us a little bit earlier in the day. Ian, with all these games being rescheduled, is any of your work being rescheduled?
Yeah. Just a little bit here and there, obviously. You know, with games being played, you know, anytime but Fridays, it makes it interesting. But also at the same time, I mean, and please don't take this as me making light of what's going on across the state. But, you know, obviously any opportunity, whether it's because of a delay or a school choosing to play on Thursday that gives me an opportunity to see extra games, I do enjoy it. Obviously, I like high school football, or I wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, trust me, I've been walking a fine line myself. Like, I wanted to use, for instance, the narrator from Waterworld on Monday, and then I was like, no, there are too many people have had their homes damaged and stuff. That's just classless, Lewis. Don't do that. That's where a good producer steps in. My guy Brian Nelson, he looked at me and he's like, nah, we shouldn't do that. And I was like, yeah.
Everybody needs copy editors is a really good hashtag on Twitter. Check it out.
Yeah, I will. Ian, taking a look at tonight's games, Conway is playing and Carolina Forest and Sacristy are playing. So Conway is playing West Florence, I believe, at Coastal. This has been a great season for Conway. I mean, back-to-back seasons of 2-9, and they're sitting here now at 5-1 with a really dynamic offense. What kind of challenge is West Florence going to present?
I think that the challenge that West Florence is going to present is that people don't exactly know what their ceiling is yet. They switch to a wing T offense, you know, trying to basically imitate, what Hartsville was doing, you know, what they've done with so much success over the years. They haven't done it. I mean, they're 1-5 for a reason, you know, but at the same time, I mean, they've got very good, they've got Aaron Darby. They've got, you know, a quarterback who can throw the ball a little bit too. So, you know, you're seeing some out of them that outside of Hartsville, Conway hasn't seen. And obviously Hartsville runs that better than anybody in the state. So it's hard to compare them, but you know, at the same time, I mean, anytime you're playing an offense like that, it can be tricky for your defense, and this is going to be another, you know, opportunity for Conway to show that they can handle, you know, differing kinds of offenses, because they're going to see three different kinds of them, you know, throughout the five games in region play.
Yeah, and Ian, this Conway turnaround, if you were to pinpoint a couple of reasons why you think they've been able to climb out of 2-9 into the situation where they're a legit playoff contender and potential region winner. I mean, I know we've kind of talked about this before, but if you're looking back on it, you know, what would those reasons be?
I think a lot of it started in the offseason with some of the hires that they made to their coaching staff. I think that they've got guys now that are either one, extremely invested in Conway football long term. I mean, there's a bunch of former players on the team here on the coaching staff now. They also, you know, hired Bob Hanna, which is probably the most, you know, notorious off-season non-head coaching hire in the state of South Carolina. I mean, guy's got, you know, almost as many wins as, you know, Chuck Jordan does. So, you know, I think that was where it started. But the other thing, I think they just kind of believed, like, you know, look, we've got Brian Edwards on the field. We've got Jermaine Martin on the field. We've got Peyton Barrett. You know, they've got actually a very underappreciated defense that is, you know, that has done some very good things as well. And so I think, you know, you put the coaching staff in place, and then you start to believe that, like, hey, we've got some serious talent, and we've got our big three who all should be playing Division I football, you know, within the next 2 years. You know, that's a good start. Their offensive line started to get better, and you just, when you wrap all that up, you know, it makes for a very dangerous team that can be very consistent week in and week out. That's what we've seen.
Would you pick them to win Region 6-4A right before we get things started here?
I did that 3 weeks ago. I think off of what I've seen from them, they've got to be considered the favorite. Sumter is never a team you want to forget about. South Florence is a very good team. Carolina Forest is going to give Conway a really good game at the end of the year. They may actually end up winning, but as of right now, I've got Conway as the favorite to win that region and go into the playoffs with a very strong seed.
He is Ian Guerin, covers high school sports better than anybody in the area on Twitter at iGuerin. Read him on MyrtleBeachOnline.com. Now, Ian, taking a look at the other two Region 6 4A teams playing tonight, Sacristy at Carolina Forest. It's been about as tumultuous a season as you could possibly imagine for Sacristy. Do you think they have a shot tonight against Carolina Forest?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Sacristy is going to beat one of these teams that they're not supposed to. And Carolina Forest is definitely got to be considered the favorite to win this game, and, you know, probably at least two more throughout the rest of region play. But, I mean, Sacristy is starting to kind of maybe figure out what they want to do. And while they didn't have a great last non-region game against St. James, I mean, they still moved the ball pretty well. So, I mean, when you take what they're trying to do and their long-term potential, yeah, they're going to be a much better team next year. But, you know, there's no reason why they can't pick somebody off this year. And tonight's one of those games where, you know, Carolina Forest is going to have to be ready, and they're going to have to do what they do very well in order to make sure that doesn't happen.
A better question, Ian, would be, what would Sacristy need to accomplish tonight to have a shot at upsetting Carolina Forest?
Well, obviously, you know, Hunter Illing is going to have a good passing game. I mean, he may not get many chances. I mean, we've seen what Carolina Forest's offense is doing now. I mean, they are running the ball, and then they are running the ball some more, and then occasionally, you know, finding a guy on the outside or a seam, you know, somebody running up the seam and making, you know, that long touchdown pass. But they don't give opponents a whole lot of opportunities, with the exception of when Dever Simmons, you know, breaks a 45-yard touchdown run or something. You know, so if they when Soxie's on the field with the ball, they need to make sure that they're making good decisions. They need to make sure they're moving the ball, not going three and out, just handing it right back to the Panthers.
Now, Ian, it seems like Myrtle Beach got their swag back a little bit against Wilson last week. When you see the 42 points on the board, you hear that the special teams were amazing. Their star running back, Brandon Sinclair, blocks three punts, and you see 42 points and better passing numbers. That's when I think of Myrtle Beach, that's what I think of. So they got back to being Myrtle Beach a little bit last week. What are your thoughts on this upcoming game with Lake City?
Yeah, I think that let me put it this way. Lake City is playing this game tomorrow without practicing since they played North Myrtle Beach last Thursday night. So that to me, and knowing that there is kind of an unspoken agreement between coaches that you don't do that if the opposing coach asks for a practice first, and Lake City went ahead with that game, that tells me that they, in their minds, they would rather sacrifice the one game against a Myrtle Beach team that has just pretty much dominated them over maybe sacrificing next Friday's game, or, you know, it could be moved to Thursday or something like that. So, you know, that tells me that, you know, Myrtle Beach has got a pretty good shot. They've been practicing since Wednesday. But let's also not forget, like you said, they're starting to put it together a little bit against teams that aren't in Class 4A or, you know, one of the best private schools in the state of North Carolina. I mean, they're not playing the competition level for the most part week to week, you know, starting last week. Throughout the rest of the regular season, and you're going to see some 35 and 40 point games from them. You know, probably, you know, I'd say that they've got a chance to do that in at least four of their five regions.
Sure, and their 2-3 record, as you were alluding to start off the season, was in large part because of who they played, but also there were some legit concerns with their passing game, and it seems like, and you just touched on that, it seems like that's really been ironed out a little bit too, and now, Ian, the really unfortunate part here with the teams that can't even play on Saturday. North Myrtle Beach and Georgetown are two teams that have a legit shot to challenge Myrtle Beach for Region 7 3A supremacy. Like, how does that affect these teams? Like, what is going to be the result of not being able to play this week?
Well, it's what they're looking at is they need to play four games in 3 weeks now. And so there's going to be a situation where I believe the region athletic directors got together either last night or today, and they're really starting to just kind of sort things out, because, you know, it doesn't just affect Georgetown, obviously. It affects North Myrtle Beach, who's been practicing since Wednesday, and as of right now, doesn't have a game on their schedule until next Friday when they play Wilson. So that says that they don't know when Georgetown's going to be able to play a football game. And while some of the Georgetown teams are starting to say, okay, we're going to play on Tuesday and then turn around and play Friday, they can't even do that, because until Sunday night at 6 o'clock, when Georgetown County School District announces whether they're in school Monday, then they don't know if they can practice Monday. They don't know if they can play a game Monday if it came down to it. So they're in this holding pattern, and you touched on it with Georgetown and North Myrtle. They are the two teams that look like they could give Myrtle Beach the best challenge. You know, and one of those three teams, I believe, is going to come out with the region title. Well, now you've got, you know, two of the three who have to play four games in 3 weeks, and they have to play each other, and they also have to play Myrtle Beach. So you're going to have to see real quickly who's ready to go, who's able to stay healthy, who's able to stay up at that high level week to week, because that's when you start, you know, jamming a large number of games into a smaller period of time. That's when you see mistakes or kids getting tired, extra cramping, you know, ankle injuries, things like that, because they're not able to practice, they're not able to do the walkthroughs, they can't even do the videos the same way they normally do. So you're going to see basically how well they can adjust on the fly.
Last question here for Ian Guerin of the Sun News. Ian, we all know that Brian Edwards is the most talented high school football player in the area. He's the best college prospect, future Gamecock four-star wide receiver. But in terms of most impressive high school football player this year, in terms of contributing to their team winning games, who would that be?
Well, I mean, I think it's obviously got a lot to do with Brian, but I really, really like what Derek is doing. You know, we talked about it, I think it was 3-4 weeks ago. You know, his throwing motion is different, and his ability to hit different wide receivers is different. And he's not just, you know, dumping off a 5-yard screen to Brian Edwards and seeing, you know, what Brian can do with the play. You know, and I just, it keeps people from jamming the box, not just against Jermaine Martin, but it also keeps them from floating a safety over the top of Brian Edwards every single time. He's got other receivers he can throw to. He's got, you know, a lot of targets. He can hand the ball off. That offensive line is giving him time to throw. He can run a little bit. So, you know, right now, if I had to pick, you know, a player of the year based on what their, you know, what I guess a plus minus type situation, I mean, it would have to be Peyton Barrett at this time.
Well, Ian, I really appreciate sneak preview of your Toast of the Coast Player of the Year right there.
we got a long way to go. Don't just yet.
Sneak peek. Conway winning the region too. Everything else, Ian's putting his name on everything. Appreciate it, man. We'll have to catch up later tonight as well.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
All right. Once again, Ian Guerin. Find him on Twitter at iGuerin. Read him, MyrtleBeachOnline.com. And we come back. My picks and our top games of the week on Facebook, as well as buy or sell. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson, hanging out with you guys as we do each and every Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 p.m., giving you a heads up of two station events coming up this weekend. Should say three. Of course, we are doing our high school football wrap-up show from 10 to 11:30 tonight. If you liked the last segment, there's more of that. The tailgate show is going to be tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. out at Brooks Stadium, right in front of Springsbrook Stadium, the baseball stadium, actually, in the main tailgate area. It is going to be Joe Catanacci and Ryan Young of the Sun News. I'm going to be doing the game day hosting for the Chanticleer Network, and Aaron's actually doing play-by-play tomorrow because Joe Cashin, the normal voice of the Chanticleers, he is National Guard. So they are needing his services in Columbia. So Aaron and I will both be on the Chanticleer Sports Network tomorrow. And then on Sunday, I'm going to be hanging out at Lincoln Park Bar and Grill from noon to 2. Officially, I'll be there for a lot of tomorrow. But officially, I'll be out there from noon to 2, watching a lot of the football games. Plenty to like out there, 30 flat-screen TVs, $5 tailgate plates. I'll be checking out the pork sliders and hand-cut fries for $5. And I'll be enjoying the heck out of the games, NFL Sunday ticket, everything you can want from a sports bar is at Lincoln Park Bar and Grill. Now, in terms of our HTC Games of the Week, we do have six games as usual on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1003, The Team. And there are a lot of big numbers. There are some things that I don't love about spreads. Like you can have a thought on a certain game, and then you're like, man, 9.5 points is a lot. That's a lot of points in a football game. And so we have two pro games with huge lines, and I usually hate that, and I find myself actually picking the two teams that are favored by that much. So running through here are college games, Georgia Tech at Clemson. The Tigers are favored by 7. Again, that's a big number, especially for how much Tech possesses the football. But I honestly believe Clemson's offense is going to click this weekend. I think they're going to beat the Jackets handily. So give me Clemson -7. Michigan and Northwestern. Michigan's favored by 7.5. That number is way too big. Northwestern is undefeated right now. And even though they're going to the Big House to play Michigan, I think Michigan wins, but Northwestern does not lose by 7.5. So give me Northwestern +7.5. Utah and California. At Utah, California is getting 7.5. I think the Utes are for real. I think they're a playoff team right now. So give me the Utes to cover 7.5. Bengals and Seahawks in Cincinnati. Cincinnati is favored by 3. Give me Cincinnati. I hate doing that, but the Seahawks offense has been dreadful this year. Packers and Rams at Green Bay. Give me the Packers -9.5. Hate doing it, but the Rams can't move the football. Cowboys and Pats. Patriots have been murdering people. Patriots are going to win by more than 9.5. Buy or sell. We're going to have to do this abbreviated today. I am buying Leonard Fournette playing 3 quarters of football. Sorry, Gamecock fans, but I think it's going to be just like the Auburn game where they pull him in the fourth quarter because LSU's got that one under control. I am selling Josh Norman's $8,600 fine for riding his horse into the end zone, stopping him. I think if that man pulls another pick six, I think he's going to continue riding that football into the end zone. All right, Sports Talk's coming up next with Cornblute and McCreary. You guys have a good weekend. Come out and see us at some of our station events, and we will be back talking football with you on Monday right here on Sports Radio 100.3.